us to start.
Silence before we start the podcast.
I was just confused. Okay, go.
Well, I know how eager you are to get me naked on a daily basis.
I try.
You do try. I'd say it's the crux of our relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you and Jason in that respect.
Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. With us today, John Wong, the Boriental, who is a massive cheater, for anyone who's unsure. There are so many bits of evidence that actually prove that this is true. One of which is John is going to Warhammered and apparently is not going to drink.
What?
Yeah, see, it's like part of the player's pack. So, like, technically it is cheating. You have an unfair advantage if you don't drink.
Maybe it's not an unfair advantage.
It is an unfair advantage. It is an unfair advantage.
Well, I would.
Hey, John, remember the last tournament you got blackout drunk at? You almost won. So I'm only going to recommend that you follow a winning formula.
Well, and you know what? John is pretty susceptible to peer pressure because if you buy him a drink, he's Asian. He can't turn it down because that's what, like bad luck for your family honor or some shit. I'm drinking scotch. Nathan, what are you drinking today?
Bacon maple rainbows.
Again. And John, what are you drinking?
I've got Grey Goose and water.
Grey Groot. I'm already.
He waters down the vodka fruits to make it more palatable.
That's excellent. All right.
And that is why he's not drinking at Warhammer.
Well, like last time I was at Lang's, I couldn't find a glass, so I was just drinking out of the bottle and then following it with ginger ale.
See, the best part of that was like you didn't even ask me where the glasses were. Like, you could have at any point just be like, hey, Lang, where's a glass? I'd have been like the cupboard by the sink. But no, you were just like, I can't find one, so he must not have any glasses.
Dude, I practically live at your house with how often I'm up there. He could have asked me as well.
He could have asked my wife. He could have asked anybody.
Or my wife, who would have just been like, that cupboard. So, I mean, yeah, your kids.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, we've been playing a lot of Warhammer 40,000 6th edition this week. I'm at about 6 games right now. I was going to play another one today, but we ended up scrapping it because we kind of ran out of time while we were getting everything ready to go. But so far, I'm about 3-3. I haven't lost a game since the first week it came out, and I lost 3 in a row to Nathan and Terry. What about you guys? What's your record sitting at right now?
I am 2-1-2.
John?
I am 2 wins, 2 draws, and 2... that's it.
2 wins and 2 draws, hey?
Yeah.
That's not so bad. I've been doing pretty good with my Necrons, kind of on and off. I was looking at my guard, trying to figure out if I could make them work with the current guard codex, but I think that there's actually no way to make them work with what I have.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, with the models you have, because I remember in the last guard codex, you had something like silly, like 11 infantry guys, then it was just like tanks and rough riders and all sorts of, you know, bibs, you know, bits and bobs, and you just can't make that.
I had the beginnings of an infantry platoon and like an armored fist squad, like that back when you could, you know, use armored fist squads the way that they are.
Well, now everything
is an armored fist squad. So it doesn't really
everything
matter.
Was an armored fist squad.
Yeah, really. Not against my Necrons. But yeah, I mean, been playing some games and played a couple games with my orcs, which were a lot of fun, and pretty much it's still on the high of enjoying 6th edition. What about you guys?
Pretty much the same thing. I've played 4 games, 4 different armies, though they will say, you played 4 or 3 games with Marine armies, it's the same thing. Shut the fuck up. It's different.
Dude, don't tell that guy to shut the fuck up. John, he's autistic.
That's right. Yeah.
You're making fun Tourette's. Of retarded kids.
It's Tourette's. You took a green Marine army followed by a different green Marine army. This doesn't make them different armies when they're from the same parent codex. They're painted the same colors, green and black. Just because you decided to paint one scorpion doesn't make them different.
It makes them different.
Sure thing. Which is hilarious because it's not like you only have Marine armies. Okay, so let's kind of get into the meat here. This is going to kind of be the first step in our comprehensive coverage of the 6th edition army book or 6th edition rule book. Boy, I am off my game today. I need to drink more.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much scotch have you
drank? Not enough, apparently. I had a couple beers earlier and with Maddie and drank some punch with a rum in it.
See, I mean, little known fact, scotch is to Lang as spinach is to Popeye. It just makes him stronger.
It's true. It's the source of my power. So obviously, like I said, this is going to be...
Wait, what am I saying? Little known fact. All of our listeners know.
Little known fact. People link pictures of Scotch on Facebook where they've tagged me as the Scotch. but really, you know, this is the first step in our kind of comprehensive review of the 6th edition rulebook. We're kind of start breaking down the phases of the game and kind of what has changed and how it's going to affect specific armies. Just kind of things that are popping out at us and kind of talk a little bit about strategy, how things are going to change. We talked last week about kind of stuff that we like and stuff that we didn't like or that we were worried about. And so, you know, if we kind of come back to those as we're going over these, in this episode, great. We may not get to it in this episode. We may come back to it again in another episode when we actually talk about that specific stuff. So, all right. So, Nathan, let's start with you. Out of the three phases of the game, like, what stands out for you as the biggest change, kind of the most dramatic change for, and which armies do you really feel it's going to affect the most?
I think shooting hands down has changed the most. I mean, you know, when you look at movement, not much has really changed. I mean, I think that there's more of an emphasis on movement because of changes done in the shooting phase, namely wound allocation.
Mm-hmm.
And assault has, you know, like we said last week, you know, it's gotten a little more elegant. It's gotten to the meat a lot faster. But otherwise, you know, combats are still just like they were in 5th edition. You know, if I kill 5 and you kill none, I win by 5.
Well, if you get there.
And let's go for it. Yeah, I mean, if you get there. And that's why I feel that shooting is sort of the big winner and the biggest changes, because when you look at it, you have you have changes to the way heavy weapons work and the fact that I can move and fire them. I mean, granted, snapshots, but before I straight up couldn't. You have changes in the way rapid fire weapons work, so I can move and still fire at full range. You have now the ability to have certain models in your squads remain stationary while the rest of the squad moves around them, again, helping out that shooting. So when you do take heavy weapons, it's never an issue of, you know,
then
before
you don't get to use them. Yeah.
Well, and that's exactly what it was. You know, Marines can get free heavy weapons in tactical squads, you know. And if you had a drop potting tactical squad, no one took the heavy weapon because I'm going to come down, I can't shoot it, then I'm probably going to spend a turn moving into position, I can't shoot it. Now, I mean, why not take the heavy bolter? It's fucking free.
Yeah.
Even if you're snapshotting it.
I take the missile.
Well, you can't.
Sure, because of the versatility.
Well, the versatility is definitely there, but you would take a missile launcher in a dev team. He's talking about a drop pot.
No, even in a drop pot, because think about it.
I'm thinking that you're a moron. You can't snap fire a template weapon.
You can snap fire the crack or the skyfire weapon, right?
You know, it's true, but honestly, I mean, a 1 in 6 chance on a one shot weapon is a sucker's bet compared to a 1 in 6 chance on a 3-shot weapon.
Exactly.
And that's only my feelings. It's just like, you know, the higher rates of fire, I think, have definitely come out the winners, because when you consider things like snapshot and Overwatch. Which again, you're still snapshotting on it, whether you're shooting at flyers, you know, you're doing your stand and shoot reaction, you're doing whatever. I think that high rate of fire is going to win out over single shot weapons every single time. I mean, I'm building my Tyranid army around high rate of fire weapons as a result, because I still think that shooting has gotten the biggest buff.
Well, and I wouldn't even say that high rate of fire has really come out on top so much as twin linked has come out on top more than anything.
Oh yeah, if you can get high rate of fire with twin linked, you're fucking golden.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there is no better combination than that. But you're absolutely right, because twin linked is again allowing you to overcome snapshot.
Yeah.
So whether you're shooting at a flyer, whether you have gone to ground and you're snapshotting, whether you're falling back and you're snapshotting, whether you are, you know, shooting Overwatch. Yeah, I mean, there's so many situations now where you will use the snapshot rule, and I think that twin linked or high rate of fire, and preferably both, is the, you know, you want to build in as much of that as you can, because it just helps you in all of those different situations that you're going to find yourself in 6th edition, which you never saw in 5th.
Mm-hmm.
Because, in 5th, you couldn't move and shoot heavy weapons. There weren't flyers. You couldn't stand and shoot. You couldn't do all of these things that exist in 6th and add that sort of tactical flexibility in the dynamic.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, for the most part, really, I would say that shooting, the changes to shooting comes in kind of a close second for me. Really, the biggest thing that I'm seeing right now is kind of the random charge range for assaults as being the biggest change, the one that affects kind of the widest range of armies right now. I was playing a couple games last week, and on two separate occasions, people failed like easy charges because they rolled like a double ones or a one and a two and missed those what would have been automatic charges in the last edition. So I think a lot of people have to kind of change their mindsets if they're playing combat-heavy armies to be exceptionally aggressive with those armies. One of the things with my orcs that I had seen when I played them was I was still kind of timidly moving up the board and like making sure my, you know, my big mech had the force field in range and kind of moving things as they were. But it really should have been a lot. I really should have played it a lot different and been a lot more aggressive because of the fact that, yes, you can make a couple long charges. And when you do, those long charges are awesome. But if you're depending on combat to win you games, you have to be putting yourself in a position where you are getting those charges all the time, or you're at least hedging your bets to the point where if you fail, it's like one in every three or four games you fail a charge.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. And what I think is interesting about the random charge range is you have certain rules that are also helping you, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Fleet is going to give you that boost because you get to reroll your charge dice, whether, you know, one or both. And I think that's the interesting thing is that one or both bit in Fleet.
Yes.
It's not an all or nothing, as all rerolls in Games Workshop history have tended to be. So for me, I think that with orcs, whereas before you'd sort of call the wa on turn two and hope you got a good lucky run roll and got in, now you're almost going to be holding back your wa because you want to you want to do it when you're looking at long charges.
Yeah.
You've got 3-4 units set up for long charges. You call the wa to reroll your charge distances.
Yes. Well, you have to be very aggressive with your transports as well. You know, you have to put them really far out there. You got to move them flat out in the shooting phase. And, you know, whereas before what you would see a lot of times was, you know, you move up 12, you deploy two, you try to make a long charge or you fleet and you try to make a charge or something like that. Really what people have to do now with transports when it comes to assault is they have to kind of view them as this turn two, you know, disembark.
But you can't assault. You can't assault after you disembark.
Well, depending on
any
the
turn,
depending,
even if you were stationary.
Well, depending on the
unless
vehicle,
you're open top.
We're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, assaulting and transports. I'm kind of referring more to open topped or open top skimmers than anything else. So, like, you know, Dark Eldar orcs. Who else is an open top fast vehicle right now? That's it.
No, that's them.
That's them.
Necrons.
I guess Necrons technically. If you want to charge in with those Necrons.
Hey, you know what? As a Tyranid player, please, you should go
means.
For it. Winning strategy right there.
Hey, out of the six games that I played, I did have one game where my Tyranid my Necrons lost combat, and they actually fled successfully. Can you believe it?
What? Wow, no,
I know.
I can't.
I just always assume they're going to lose and die.
I do like the fact that you can regroup while under now it's 25% for the regroup, and even if you're within 6 inches, there's no more of that escorting a unit off the board type bullshit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean it's fantastic because I mean realistically, what happened in fifth? Your empty 35-point Rhino just drove a unit that had bad dice break,
right,
and walked them off the board for like 10 times their points value, you know? So yeah, I agree with you. I love the fact that you can always regroup. It doesn't matter if enemies are close or not. And rather than below half where it's just like, nope, go fuck yourself. Now it's below 25%. And even then you still have the chance on Insane Courage, which is exactly like fantasy. And,
yeah.
And again, I like that because it has that sort of, you know, it gives you a chance. I mean, I've had units in my Dark Eldar army in 4th edition where it was just like, you know, I took a unit of 16, I lost 9, I failed my morale check, so now the 7 can't regroup. And they just walk slowly off the board shooting splinter cannons for like 3 turns. And you're just like, you know, fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, there's still 7 of them. I've got my sergeant. I've got my special weapon, you know, my 2 special weapons, my 2 heavy weapons. Like, come on, give me something here. Mm-hmm. So I like that they've done things like that. The other interesting thing that I like that is actually a departure from fantasy is the fact that when you are looking at scoring victory points for scenarios that do, you know, that are straight victory points, right? Or at least killing victory points. I mean, they're all straight victory points. If you're fleeing at the end of the game, you're dead. It's not like fantasy where you have to have run off the board. So,
right.
I mean, it's just like it's it does help, especially since 40K is a game where you can sort of build a victory point denial kind of list.
Well, yes, mm-hmm. for the most part. I mean, it really is interesting with the scenarios, the way that they're built right now, because even those units that are kind of fleeing or broken up, if you are able to get them back on the table as an active unit and rally them, all they're really going to do is, what's the term that they use in the book? Deny?
Yeah, scoring and denial.
Yeah, units. Denial units, right? So that's all you're really going to use them for. But again, like even one Marine is going to count as the denial unit, you know? So it's interesting to kind of look at those and really understand their worth all the way up to the point where there's literally nothing left in the unit, and then they're actually worth nothing, you know? They're not going to be doing as much as shooting. They're not going to be doing much in assault. But, you know, if you play that Marine correctly, and again, he's always going to rally, right? You play that Marine correctly, he can be running around the board really screwing up people's day, you know, which is kind of interesting, the idea of having like a 5-man assault team, assault squad, you know, with jump packs, and you got one guy left, he can be all over the board, you know? So, and even jet bikes, kind of the same way.
Bikes, same thing. Yep. Yeah.
So, okay, John, out of the three phases, is there any particular change that kind of stands out in your mind as being one of the more dramatic changes to the way that we play the game right now?
Overwatch. I got burnt a couple times with Overwatch.
I think at this point, everybody's been burnt by Overwatch at least one or two times, especially when they're playing an unnamed Asian who keeps telling them that Overwatch, you only get one shot for snapshots, even though your weapon has two or three shots. I think that would be a cheating Asian. Oh, wait, it was John. It was John.
When did I tell you that?
In Edmonton.
In Edmonton. In Nathan's
game. No, but no.
You don't even remember.
Forgot to overwatch my Terminators into his unit, too.
That's your own damn fault if you forget.
That's my own damn fault. Well, it's your own damn fault for not reading the fucking rules. Aren't you English?
Hey-o.
Let's simmer down now, okay? Let's simmer down.
Let's stop slinging mud.
You're raging.
See, this is what happened when I drink vodka,
it's
you know?
It's a raging.
Yeah, raging.
Love it. That's the thing is you know, I really think that Overwatch, even though it is a you know, assault phase mechanic, I think that it's brilliant. John Stark Eldar felt it harsh. I mean, he lost 10 witches to an Overwatch shot out of 10. Like, it's just like, you know,
great.
Yeah, you know, they charged a unit that had 36 strength, 6 twin link shots, and like I said earlier, high rate of fire and twin linked. If you can get that, it's fucking money. And yeah, I think Overwatch was the game break, you know, the game maker for my game against John with my Tyranids against his Dark Eldar, even though it did end in a draw.
Which is pretty much every game we play.
Yeah, which is basically every game we play. You know, because it was one of those things where it's just like, you know, my big fat unit that's throwing out all those shots would like basically open up and destroy whatever they shot at, you know, because it was a raider and then a fighter and, you know,
mm-hmm.
everything. And then John would charge me and I'd wipe out another unit. And you're just like, holy shit. Like, it's just like the power that such a high rate of fire twin linked unit has in this edition with Overwatch. Because, I mean, honestly, who cares if I'm hitting on sixes if I have 36 shots that are twin linked?
And that's why I'm talking about the assault phase being the biggest change there. Even with the random distances on top of that, you're always going to have to now deal with trying to estimate the strength of your...
You still get shot to shit, too, because of the Overwatch. You still get to Overwatch even if they don't make the charge.
Well, what I'm really saying is, like, you have to try to now calculate, okay, I'm going to charge him with 10 guys, but how many guys am I actually going to be able to get into combat after he gets his Overwatch shots, you know?
Well, and even then, because wound allocation is nearest to farthest, you have to look at it and say, okay, if I need 9 inches now and he kills one guy, which realistically you can expect most units to accomplish on an Overwatch, what's my charge distance actually looking like? Because after I declare, he gets to Overwatch. So he overwatches before I roll the dice. So that's why I think that long charges, even though, you know, a lot of people kind of talk about how random charge distances screw shooting armies because you can get longer than 6 inches, so you're charging sooner.
Yeah, but Overwatch is the balance to that.
Oh, and that's exactly my point, because like I said, assault armies aren't going to want to declare long charges. Because when you look at it, like I said, if you look at it and you're like, okay, I'm 9 inches away, I'm going to declare, he's going to shoot me, and then I need a 10 or 11. Well, I can't make that. I'm not going to give him free shots.
Yes. You have to play a lot smarter with your assaults, and you have to be really, really aggressive. Like, you have to be on top of him. But you also have to kind of be planning a couple turns ahead and thinking to yourself, well, I could make a long charge this turn, but am I going to let him get another round of shooting on me, and then he shoots me next turn, and then I try to get in? Or am I going to, hedge my bets and just say, you know what, I'm not going to make that long charge. I have to deal with the fact that I'm not going to be in combat until next turn and try to play around it, you know? And those are the types of things that I think people are going to have to get used to thinking about in the movement phase. I think a big mistake that a lot of people are going to be making right now with 6th edition is they're not going to really see those things until the assault phase, and it's too late by then.
Oh, you're absolutely right, because, I mean, if I declare a long charge and I fail it on that turn, I'm basically giving him three more opportunities to shoot me, because he's getting that Overwatch, then I fail it, then he shoots me at his ballistic skill, then he's getting another Overwatch if I survive. Right. So, I mean, it's
kind of
like...
When you could have ran.
You're absolutely right. So that's why I think you're right. I think that what Overwatch and random charges and the wound allocation all sort of combine to do is they do combine to make the movement phase more important. Because, like you said, you don't want to sort of move out and just be like, I'm going to charge this turn. All right, whose computer's dinging?
Oh, that would be John Kingsway sending me something here. I can't mute it, because otherwise I won't be able to hear you, gentlemen. But I will go ahead and set myself as offline. Ha ha!
Excellent.
Go to hell. I have disdain for John Kingsway. Whatever, I'll talk to him later. He's just mad because I ruined his Tau. Guess how many victory points he got? Zero.
What were you playing?
My Necrons.
See, that's crazy that he couldn't even get like a...
You were doing long deployment too.
Dude, all right. I'm sorry.
It was so good.
John Kingsway, but like, what are you doing wrong?
Okay, my dice,
30 inches
of
rage.
Dice were amazing. His dice were shit. I made two long charges with my Nightbringer. I made a 9-inch and a 10-inch charge with my Catan. So it was just like, boom, boom, boom. And then I had a squad of 4 Night Sides fully upgraded with the particle beamers. And so I would just roll up to one of his units, place 4 blast templates on them, and just wipe out the entire unit in one shot. And they were basically just deleting units off the table, like turn after turn after turn. And he kept shooting them, but it's just like, well, they've got a Jinx save, so it's a 5+, and then Namasur Zadrek gives them stealth, so they actually have a 4+. So they're just super hard for him to kill, and no matter how much firepower he put into them, he could not kill that unit. It was amazing. He couldn't kill one unit. I enjoyed myself. After 3 losses the weekend before, I was pretty happy to be able to pull out a win.
Fair enough.
Like, yeah, Tau.
Yeah, poor Tau. I mean...
Well, his list was really not built to deal with Necrons, that to say the least. But kind of back on topic.
Well, I was just going to say that I think we're going to see that a lot.
Yes.
Because, again, it's just like, for the old Jaded Gamers, when 5th edition dropped, you were seeing 4th ed armies for years, mm-hmm. years afterwards, because people just weren't sort of catching the nuances. And I think we're gonna see the same with 6th ed.
Yeah.
I think
we said last episode, we're expecting to continue to play the majority of armies are going to be 5th edition armies for at least a year. It'll mm-hmm. be at that point, the metagame will start to build. It'll be another year after that before we really start seeing a real hardcore metagame for 6th edition.
Yeah, I agree. But even then, I mean, I've played 5 games so far, and I couldn't even tell you what a 6th edition army looks like.
No, it's kind of strange right now.
Yeah, so that's the thing.
Especially when it comes to unit sizes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've had a lot of people asking me lately, do you really think it's worth it to take a full unit size? Like, or do you feel like you're better off with kind of this 2/3 size or half size units and just running them around the table and kind of playing them that way? I think a lot of people are kind of looking at that now, especially because of the way deployment has changed, where we've got 6 scenarios with 3 different deployments per scenario. It's very, very hard to plan for exactly what you're going to have to do with these armies. And I think people now are, especially when the edition changes and nobody's really sure about the rules, and you've got Asians telling you only get 1 snapshot and all these different types of things.
And just die.
I love you,
John. Oh, my God.
I love you, John.
I can't wait till you have a hunting accident.
Oh.
Wow. And then suddenly things get awkward on Jaded Gamercast.
But, right? John? John talk.
What? Oh, boy.
I told you if you weren't drinking.
I am drinking. You just told me to drink and it gets me angry.
It's so entertaining, though. What was I talking about?
You're talking John about cheating.
Before that. And honestly, I think that one was even just in my head. I heard it as like a side comment.
No, honestly, what happened there was John said it to Terry, who was playing her Tau. They then looked the rule up and were like, no, I can fire as normal, and moved on. So at no point did anyone actually only shoot one shot or anything like that. Oh. It was just said because
I heard that story differently. So you can blame Nathan for that.
I was gonna say it was the first game of sixth edition that all of us had played without reading the rule book because we bought it and we're like, fuck, we need to play now.
Yeah, well, we wanted to try to get some games in before we recorded the show. Okay,
it's true.
So, John, mm-hmm. I don't want you to be angry. We're all gonna hug. It's gonna be good.
Are you sure? Because I must say, angry sex is the best kind of sex. It is. Line.
Revenge sex.
Ooh, revenge sex, yeah.
What do you feel about unit sizes, John?
The bigger the better.
Oh, that's also works for revenge sex.
That's what she said. But I'm serious. Like 20-man chaos units, the biggest units you can get, or like blob squads are going to be things that are going to be really tough in this new edition.
Yeah.
Even, like I said, I operated a 20-man chaos space marine unit, and it was, like, it was awesome. As Nathan played against it the first game we played, so.
Oh, it's true. I mean, we basically traded units. My gargoyles fucked your 10 Terminators, and your 20-man blob squad fucked my gargoyles. Like, you know, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think I'm gonna take a step back, because I think that for unit sizes, it really depends on what style of army you're playing. Now, if you're playing a shooting army, the bigger the better. And that's as straight up as it is. And the reason for that is you are maximizing your Overwatch. With that being said, I think if you're playing an assaults army, you really need to adhere to an MSU, multiple small units, because you can only overwatch a single unit a turn. So what the money is going to be for assault armies is, rather than sending in two 10-man squads into a combat, you send 4 5-mans. Because that way you know that you will have at least 15 guys that are 100% okay because they can't get shot with Overwatch.
I get the point of that. I do. I do see that.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that's what we're going to end up sort of seeing the metagame starting to switch to, is you're going to see shooting armies starting to take bigger and bigger units. Meanwhile, you're going to start seeing assault armies taking the minimum size units. You take the minimum, you take a sergeant, maybe a special weapon if you can, at a 5-man squad. I know a lot of codexes don't allow it anymore. And that's what you're going to end up doing. Cause, Blood Angels, for example, if I was running a Blood Angels army, I would not take combat Blood Angels. Shooting Blood Angels, completely different. But if I was playing combat Blood Angels, I would just take nothing but 5-man squads. 5-man.
I think for Marines, and then you can get away with it.
Pain on top of it. You know, and absolutely. I mean, I play Tyranids. And so, I mean, with that being said, my Hormigaunts are always 30. My Gene Stealers are always 20. Because with wound allocation and the fact that I have no armor, I need to deal with that. But, I mean, if I was playing Orcs and I could get trucks and transports, I would want to run 2 big, fat shoot-a-boy squads. So that way, again, they're shooting units that have fuck tons of shots. And then I would run 4 truck-boy squads. So that way I have 48 orcs that are all going to be multi-charging units. I'm not going to charge, you know, one unit here, one unit here, one unit here, because it completely defeats the purpose. But I'm going to say 2 units into here. One unit's getting in 12-man strong. One unit's going to get shot up from Overwatch, but I don't care because I know I have the redundancy built in with that second unit.
I don't know. I think that's a bit short-sighted. I think that would work very well in smaller-sized games. I think the same...
Works well for armies that can combat tactics.
Right. Well, I think really it's...
Yeah, and I think John has it.
Yeah.
With combat tactics, with Blood Angels, you take 60 assault marines and you split them into fucking 12 units of 5.
If you have that many force organization slots.
Yeah, but that's 6 troops.
Right. But, what you know, really what it comes down to for me is that the same problems with having small units still apply here. You know, the fact that it's too easy to weaken them, it's too easy to make them less effective. You know, if you're dealing with a 3+ save and you've got the tactics to go with it, yes, by all means. Blood Angels doing that, that would be a very interesting army to play. I wouldn't necessarily say it would be amazing or great, but it would definitely be an interesting army to play. I think what would be very interesting about it is if you are running up against another combat-heavy army, you're going to find yourself in a little bit of trouble if he's not taking the MSU as well. If he's taking large blob combat units, charging five guys into a unit of 30 orcs is not going to be good for you at all. It's a waste of five Marines. But
you're right, but I think you're missing the point because I'm not talking about working the buddy system. You'd never just throw five Marines in unless you failed three other charges.
Well, okay,
you
but if
you want to be hitting them 20 Marines on 30 orcs.
Well, obviously, in the perfect world, that's what you want to be hitting them, right? But if you fail two out of four charges, you're basically screwing yourself and you're putting him in a position to then countercharge your assault Marines because you're so far out of position.
Listen, I'm
not saying that it's not applicable.
With random charges, it is going to be something you see, but I really feel that in order to overcome Overwatch, especially against heavy shooting units, because, I mean, honestly, if I throw 10 Marines, 10 Assault Marines, or even 30 Orcs into a 50-man guard blob squad that Overwatches with rapid fire, for fuck's sakes, that's 80 lasgun shots and, you know, five heavy weapons of their choice.
Right.
So if those are autocannons, that's 10 autocannon shots that they're getting, possibly flamers for wall of flame. So, I mean, it's just like they are going to absolutely fucking obliterate my 10-man squad down to one or two guys.
Mm-hmm.
But if that same 10-man is now 2 5-men, sure, they'll wipe out a 5-man and I'm getting 5 men in. So really all that's doing, because I agree with you, your normal shooting phase is going to reduce the effectiveness of that 5-man squad. But that's why, you know, I think John nailed it on the head. Like, I think what we're going to see with the meta with Blood Angels is going to be 10-man squads that are always combat squatting. Because that way you're getting your two special weapons, you're getting your sergeant, and you're getting the ability to mitigate Overwatch.
Marines.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Xenos is different, but I mean,
Marines can do it. Xenos. Marines can do roughly anything. You want 7-man squads, Marines, it'll work. You can make it work. Like, it's just...
True.
Anything you want to try with Marines, it'll work. Like, again, I kind of look at that, and it does seem kind of strange. I think, yeah, maybe for Blood Angels, because you can go with the Assault Marines, and you can take the Combat Squads, and Combat Squads can split for free. So if you are going to be running up against big blob combat units where it's not advantageous for you, yeah, well, that's Marines. That's what Marines do. But I think everyone else is going to kind of be sitting there going, yeah, I'm going to want a full unit size. I would have to agree with John. I think bigger is better in almost every situation, maybe with the exception of Blood Angels. But that's a whole comment on Sanguinius' size of his cock.
Well, I mean, no. See, Sanguinius is just a size queen. He loves the bigger ones, you know, in the back.
He's a sloppy party. I mean, if you really want to maul somebody with a Blood Angels army, you take the 20-man jump pack, like just bog standard jump pack Death Company unit with a chaplain stuck in it.
Well, I mean, at the very least, it's going to draw fire all game.
You know, for 750 points, I can think of better uses of it. Because remember, Feel No Pain got less effective.
Well, I think it's...
Yeah, Feel No Pain got less effective, but Rage lost all of its old...
Yeah, all of its old drawbacks.
I mean...
It's true, but defensive grenades now eliminate all bonuses for charging. So Rage is neutered by anyone with defensive grenades.
Yeah, but that unit still has more attacks than a charging normal assault squad unit anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I think you are forgetting, though, that shooting is constantly pushing you back, and you're only getting Hammer of Wrath on turns where you charge with your jump pack. So you're going to be moving six, going for the longer charge. So realistically, that unit's charging a turn later than it used to be. Being as big as it is, it's going to draw all of the heavy firepower. So, I mean,
I think you're wrong on that, Nathan. I really do. I mean, we talked about this before in the assault phase. It's not so much about trying to hit those long charges and charging from the distance as you were used to before. It's taking that step back into the next turn and knowing that you're going to get right up on top of them. When I was looking at the jump pack rules for Hammer of Wrath, I sat there thinking to myself, like, I don't know if I'm ever really going to use this. I'd almost rather make sure I'm close enough to get in there. But even still, if I do that, it's still almost always going to be a relatively long charge. So I'm just better off with a big unit that can soak up some fire, who in the next turn is just going to move six, be right on top, and re-roll those dice for, you know, using your jump pack in the assault phase, which, again, like you said earlier in the podcast, is awesome.
No, you know, absolutely. Like I said, it's just I don't think that that is a unit you're actually going to see in a lot of cases because it's the one trick wonder. It's one of those units where you know, you've built your list and you've said, my opponent cannot kill 20 death company, and therefore I win. And if he can't, great, you win. If he can,
yeah, how much is that Carnifex unit, though? Like your double devour Carnifex unit?
Way less than yours.
How much is it?
With the prime, it is 680 points.
Not that much cheaper.
Yeah, but I mean, that Carnifex unit would fuck your face.
Unless somebody's just got a crap ton of last cannons on the table.
Eh. Yeah. Again, I'm mitigating. But I mean, like, that's the thing. So it's just like, you know, again, I think it's a good... Like I said, I don't know. I don't think that that is going to be an effective Blood Angels list. It looks scary on paper. You look at it and you're like, oh, but what can deal with it? It's 20 guys in power armor.
I honestly think what we're looking at, though, is the math hammer where you're basically just trading one for the other. You're trading the fact that, oh, well, just one squad's going to get wiped out. But, I mean, if you're talking about having five guys wiped out of one squad as opposed to five guys wiped out of a 10-man squad or five guys wiped out of a 20-man squad, you know, like, what are the chances on Overwatch that they're actually going to kill more than five Marines?
No, yeah, but I mean, you know, if we're talking in a bubble and all we're saying is, okay, all I get is one Overwatch.
Oh my God, Marine. Are we in a bubble?
That's what you're talking
this is
about.
The
you're saying,
Matrix.
Right? No,
I know
giant
what you mean, and that's
balls.
Not
it's
what
exactly,
I'm.
It's exactly how we podcast.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and that's not what I'm trying to get at here. What I'm saying is, I don't think that the benefit of that is outweighing the benefit of the other, any more or less.
Let me take a step back. What I am saying is, I think that unlike in 5th edition, which was truly a list builder's game, you know, because I mean, for fuck's sake. For the last 3 years of 5th edition, everyone always talked about how it was rock, paper, scissors. My list beats your list, therefore we go through the motions and I get the W.
Okay.
Your list beats my list, blah, blah, blah. I think that 6th edition has too many variables. We can't just say this. We can't just get out there and say, okay, let's math hammer it up. And this 20-man unit with rage and, you know, a chaplain, it kills... You know, it kills everything because you know what? If I have three Lehman Russes, I kill it to a man and it doesn't get fucking close to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just like that's the thing where it's just like there's just too many variables now in 6th edition, you know, because we've talked about it. Movement is more important. Shooting is more powerful. And charges, you have to be smarter about. So that's why, like I said, I don't think that the typical tropes of math hammer and saying point for point, this unit's going to beat this because of X, Y, and Z, and I'm going to shoot this and kill this. I don't think that math hammer works as effectively. You know, because at the end of the day, fuck snapshot. Shit happens.
Right, well...
You know, look at Terry's Fire Warriors double tapping you. 24 shots on Overwatch and 9 hit.
Right.
Like, shit happens, and I really feel that 6th edition has worked in so many more dice rolls, and I'm specifically trying to use this wording because this is what all the 40k players always bitched about with 8th edition is it's too random, but I truly feel that 6th edition is a more random game than 8th, and that's why you can't really just build a list and say this can beat everything.
Well, and I agree, but I agree with John.
No, like, we're not saying
I'm also trying to make it up
the unit
I don't
should
want to
be
a set
using,
anymore.
But, I mean, it is an
well,
option.
Well, that's only because Asia's
a viable option.
Okay.
What?
I was just saying you don't want him to be mad at you because Asians know kung fu.
That's
it's
true.
It's a legitimate truth.
And he owns more guns than me. Sorry, John, repeat what you said.
What I was saying is I'm not saying it's something that everybody should go out and do. I'm just saying it's a vile – it's like, you know, before, Death Company. You take them and you're like, ah, they're not really doing anything unless they're in a small unit. But this has become where, hey, you can take that big unit. It's not a risk anymore because it can't be like, oh, look, a rhino. Let's follow that. Like, you know, shiny bag syndrome or whatever.
Yeah.
Like it's a viable unit. Like 6th edition has changed so many units like that. Like imagine – like go the other way. Say you go – you don't want you want something that can still take that much punishment. It would be like putting a Mark of Nurgle on a 20-man Raptor unit.
Right.
You know, it's true, but I mean, at this point, basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to come up with 40k Death Stars because that's all it is. Is you're basically saying, okay, I've spent 750 plus points Because I, you know, what's a death company with a jetpack?
No, it 30 would be 7 each? Points exactly.
Even with the chaplain?
With the chaplain, you're adding 130 probably.
Yeah, so I mean, all right. So you're saying for 830 points, these 20 guys, or 21 guys, you know, can't be beat. And all I'm saying is, I mean, fuck, this is Warhammer 40,000. We have, you know, rapid-firing sniper units. We have fucking battle cannons. You know, there's everything else. And so, I mean, I don't know if the Death Star is going to be an effective 40K strategy the way it is in fantasy.
I think it depends on the game size.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you see Death Stars more in the 2,000 to 20, or I'm sorry, the 2,500 point range in Warhammer 8th edition than you do in the 2,000 point range.
Absolutely.
It's one of those things that as you start getting up to that level of points, it becomes more and more viable. So yeah, if you're playing a 1,500 point game, no, you don't want to spend half of your points on that because, like you said, it's a one trick pony.
2,000, it becomes a unit that you can look at and be like, okay, I can build support in for that though.
I don't know because honestly, I feel that there's kind of a reverse sliding scale that, you know, for 40K than fantasy, because in 40K, the higher the points get, the more big shiny toys I can get. So I mean, if we're playing 1,500, my guard army might have one Lehman Russ. If we're playing 2,000, well, now I have three Lehman Russes and a squadron or single or whatever, and I've got, you know, Medusas, and I've got, because, you know, once I fulfill my compulsory
rock paper scissors, but it's also what else you bring, right? It's not just one game of rock paper scissors. I bring one unit, you bring one unit that counteracts that. No, you bring an army that has cohesion, so you build redundancy into your.
Oh, well, it's totally true, but I know exactly what your 830 points are going to do. It's completely easy to counter. It's obvious, you know, like it is a one trick pony because all it's trying to do is run into assault and fuck my face with their hammer.
Okay, it's not
and their rage and their everything.
It's not a one trick pony. That's what that unit is built to do. It's like saying that Khorne Berserkers are a one trick pony. They're Khorne Berserkers.
They
well, it's just because that's what that unit does. Tau Fire Warriors are a one trick pony. You know, like, because all they do is shoot. I know every turn they're going to shoot. You buy them for that specific stuff. It's not like Marines. Again, Marines, yes, they can kind of mix up the... I've got somebody calling me right now.
I was going to say, whose phone is ringing?
I can't mute the house phone.
God damn it. What is wrong? See, I hear you muting the house phone.
Hold on.
You know, I don't know. Listen, I you know, I swear. Oh, wow, all right.
But
I'm almost tempted for you to put that on because I'm curious how this conversation is going to be now that you've hung up on her.
No, I didn't hang up on her. She's just going to leave a message and I'll call her back. But really, no, I mean, it just, the idea of them being a one trick pony, that makes no sense to me because it's absolutely
it's what that unit does. It's
that's
unit's
what it's
purpose.
Built to do. You build other stuff around it. It's not like all you're going to do is build an army of nothing but Death Company. Oh, Jesus. Okay, hold on a sec. Hold 2 seconds. 2 seconds. Oh, here we go. There we go.
Well,
okay,
Nathan and I talk to each other, right?
I'm recording the podcast right now. Can I call you back? Can I call you back?
Hello?
Hi. I know you're in the mountains. It's probably cutting out. I'm recording the podcast right now.
Hear you. You're cutting out.
I'm recording the podcast right now. Can I call you back? Oh, okay.
Here, Nathan and I go talk. Go away.
Oh, okay. I'm going to mute my mic for about 2 seconds here. Hold on. I don't want to hang up the call because that would be like the worst thing in the world. All right, go.
All right, no.
I understand it, Nathan. I understand what you're saying. But I mean, it's not like I'm saying it's a crazy viable unit everybody should go out and save. But it gives you the option to take these crazy units and try them out. Take that unit and it might – it's not like a before where you're like, if you took that unit, you're friggin' insane. It's never going to work.
Although
that might actually work.
Jump troopers with rapid fire weapons, they are one of the only ones that can take it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, can you imagine assaulting that squad and it all has bolters? That would suck balls.
It's true. No, I don't know. Like I said, it's just for me, you know, when I look at the price tags and it's such a steep price tag that you're like, okay, so I could have 20 Death Company with jump packs and a chaplain, or I could take 40 assault marines, load them up with special weapons and sergeants, and maybe squeeze in a naked Sang priest. Two to one, and I have the exact same levels of survivability. And you can't say that those 20 guys are going to throw more attacks than my 40 would if we are all charging. So that's why I just look at it and I'm like, yeah, I guess you could do it. It might do well. But I think that the games it's going to do well in are the only games where someone is not prepared to deal with one big blob of 20 Marines. And that's it. And that's what it comes down to. Because if I have an answer, if I have battle cannons, if I have a Carnifex unit, because I would bet money my Carnifex unit would win. I ignore your feel no pain and your armor saves. Fuck are you.
Not my feel no pain.
Yes, I
like, well,
strength,
well, on the
I'm strength stuff. 9. I ignore your feel no pain. I instant death those fuckers. not with my shooting, granted, but in combat when you finally get there. But that's why it's just like, you know, if you're going to spend that many fucking points on a unit, for me, go for versatility. And that's why I'm in love with that Carnifex unit. Because it shoots well, it fights well, it can just dominate the center of the board. You just put them in the center and you just watch everything kind of wilt and die underneath their firepower. And then you're right, you build an army around there to support them. So, like I said, I don't know. If you want to give it a shot, give it a shot, but I don't think you're going to see it in a lot of tournament lists because of the fact that...
Yeah, but I understand that, but I was like, it's not that it isn't... Like, okay, it does have... Like, I know you're looking at it and going, okay, how does my unit deal with that, right? But looking at, like, the rest of the armies, like, it's still got a couple of different things because it could still deep strike with Descent of Angels. Right?
Yeah, that's fair. So again, it deep strikes, it fires its pistols, and then it's in the middle of an army. Like I said, it's just, I don't know. Again, I'm always going to come down to that whole one trick pony thing because a unit like that, you know, like Khorne Berserkers, you know, Death Company with jump hacks, you know what they're trying to do. And so you can bubble wrap them. You can,
but that's always been the case. Like, you've always looked at it and gone, okay, that's a one trick pony unit. Every unit you can say that about. What is your Carnifex? Like, your Carnifex unit can do all sorts of things. But it's but if you look at it, it is a shooting one trick pony. It's mainly a shooting unit.
Well,
like,
yeah,
if it ever came down to it didn't get an overwatch in an assault phase, I think its face might get punched in.
Family obligation right concluded. They're camping in the mountains, so it's like they call to say goodnight, and it's just like, well, I can't. I got it. Okay, we'll just... Okay, yeah. So has Nathan been more wrong, John?
No, it's. I understand the point he's making.
Oh, of course.
The point that you'll always see. That you're like, okay, that big Death Star unit doesn't make any sense because it's one-trick pony. That's its job.
It's fair, but I think, again, my point is coming down to is the fact that I don't think that Death Stars are viable in 40K because of the fact that battle cannons can instant death the shit out of things. Because, again, one Lehman Russ with its pie plate, put it in the middle of that unit. Now I've removed 8 because I'm ignoring your armor and your feel no pain thanks to instant death.
Right.
Yeah, and you're just like, my 100-point battle tank that has, basically unlimited range at 72 inches. So it's just like, okay, if I go first, I'm gonna punch a hole in you, and then you're gonna move, and I'm gonna punch a hole in you, and I'm gonna, you know. So that's why I just do not feel that Death Stars are viable in 40K, and I think that's why let's spend 830 points.
Let's say my bike command squad with a commander.
Hey, great! It's 200-300 points, maybe 400 with the character in there. It's fast, it's small, it gets the job done that it needs to do. And that's, again, I'm okay with that. But once, you know, if you were to say it costs twice as many points as it does, that's when I'm going to say, John, take something else.
Well, okay, I think the interesting thing here is that...
I say the same thing when you go multiple small units. Like, okay, you take 40 assault troopers, you buy them all the upgrades, you take... Right. And then you combat squad them all up. If they get... Like you're going for assaulting multiple units and hoping that the Overwatch only can take out one unit. We saw that before with my Witches versus your Incubi. Mm-hmm. I know where that train of thought comes from. But then
absolutely.
We're looking at it as in, this is a shooting game, so there's a lot more chances to shoot. That 5-man unit is probably not going to get there. Period.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I just want to jump in here real quick. One of the things right now that I think is kind of weird about this conversation even is that I agree with Nathan. Death Stars are not going to be very viable in Warhammer 40,000 6th edition. They weren't viable in 5th edition. They weren't viable in 4th edition. The reason for that is because the majority of armies don't have the option to take any sort of Death Star in any sort of capacity. So it's a kind of a moot point. I think that the idea here is that what Nathan is saying, and the biggest thing that I disagree with here with what Nathan is saying, is that he's really pointing at MSU to become the big metagame for 6th edition, and that's the only thing I really disagree with. I think in some
MSU
cases...
MSU for assault armies.
Okay.
MSU for assault armies.
Assault marine
again,
armies.
You know, again...
Assault marine armies.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, I think that you are going to see orc armies that are running MSU with units of bikes.
Okay, but that's...
And unit... No, hear me out. You're going to see orc armies, you know, basically speed freak orc armies with bikes and storm boys and trucks.
Yes.
And even battle wagons are going to be a fuckload's more effective on the tabletop than you're going to see foot slogging orc armies. And that's a big dynamic shift from 5th edition.
Very much.
I think the only combat army that, you know, is still going to have to take those big units is Tyranids, because they don't get transports. They don't really get, I mean, yeah, I get a drop pod. Sure, but
yeah, and again,
you know, orcs, so I mean, they're the only real exception that I see. 30-man orc units are all going to be shooter boys.
Okay,
otherwise,
yes.
You're going to see small units in trucks. You're going to see small units of storm boys. You're going to see small units of bikes. You're going to see, you know, and that's what's going to take over for assault armies in order to combat the fact that Overwatch can only shoot one target. So you're going to always be trying to multi-charge.
Okay, but not all assault armies have trucks that are open-topped, and not all assault armies have 20-man marine units, and not all assault armies have jump packs. Like, I think MSU works in a very small percentage of places. When you talk about trucks and speed freaks, you can only put so many guys in a truck to begin with. You can only put so many guys in a battle wagon to begin with, right? Like,
20.
These are the... John, that's awesome. Thank you. You know, but like, I don't feel like that's what's changed the metagame, is the fact that this is what's changed. It's just, does it make a truck boy squad more viable? Yeah, absolutely. But that's, you know, and I even said it when I played against Terry's Tau. I said, I need at least another truck, and I need a couple flyers, and I need to be able to get my guys across the board faster, and that's all
yeah,
it really comes down
this,
to.
Think about it, like the counterbalance of that. Trucks only have 2 hull points. Same with raiders and all that other junk. It's like, okay, yes, you get the availability of an assault vehicle, but you're still going to get your face shot off.
Right. But at that point, you can afford to get your face shot off because you're orcs.
Well, but I mean, that's even my point when I say, you know, hey, Blood Angels, take, you know, if you have 6 10-man assault squads that you split into 12 units, and you're saying, oh, but a 5-man unit gets, you know, its effectiveness reduced. Yeah, that's fine. I have 11 more. And that's only 1,000 points or 1,200 points. So, you know, that's my point with the MSU, is I really feel that with assault armies specifically, that's the approach you need to go if your army can do it. Because, yeah, you're right. There are certain armies that can't.
Well, it depends if you can get them there. Like, okay, let's go to the other point. If you don't take your Hammer of Wrath, you take a 15-man or a 14-man Death Company in power armor with one chaplain and put him in a Land Raider Crusader.
There you go.
Deep Strike the Land Raider Crusader, too.
Well, now you're just being silly.
Hey, no, it's not being silly in this edition.
Yeah, it costs as much as the 20-man squad did.
Yeah, well, I think it costs more once you've...
No, it doesn't, because it's 150 points to put jetpacks on 10 Death Company. So you're looking at...
You're looking about 30 points a Marine, so...
No, it's 200. No, it's 20 points each. It's 280 points for 14 Death Company, 130, so you're looking for the chaplains. Or no, because he doesn't have a jetpack now, so it's only a base 100 points if you don't give him any special weapons.
It's basically the same. Whether you take 20 with jump packs or 15 without in a Land Raider Crusader, it's basically the same.
All right, well, if you actually got anything out of this week's episode of Jaded GamerCast,
good for you. Yeah, good on you. Basically, we're just...
There's a lot of disparate viewpoints here, which is, hey, that's to be expected when a new edition drops on us. But I want to go ahead and move us on, because we are running to the end of the show here. I want to move us on to the stupidity check for this week. I'm going to throw it out there. The Psychic Powers table, the one that tells you which army can take which Psychic Powers, not being in the rulebook.
Why? That way
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. That's a close one compared to the Tau anti-aircraft tank that doesn't have anti-aircraft abilities.
Okay,
Nathan, your call then.
I'm going to try to top you all.
Okay, bring it.
All right, everybody, open your rule book. I'm on the introduction. Page 13 of the introduction. What you will need... bottom right hand side, pen and paper. I'm quoting the book at this point.
Yeah, we laughed about this last week.
Probably the most boring accessories imaginable until the Hollow Quill and Data Slater finally invented. Now, I'm just going to stop there because, hey, Games Workshop, they've been invented. We've been using them for 10 years. But, hey, good on you.
Why not?
Good on you being all quaint. All
right, that's stupid. that's stupid from that kind of hilarity point of view where they're trying to be funny and it's just an utter epic fail on trying to be like humorous and make somebody giggle. But exactly, like your first response is just like, yeah, but it's already there. Like we have like nobody's using pen and paper unless they literally have nothing else in front of them. But I still think mine is stupider because it comes down to the rules. Like if you didn't buy the psychic cards pack, you've got the rules in the book for psychic powers. And you're playing Imperial Guard, and you want to use your psychic powers.
They're in the White Dwarf.
Oh, fuck that. Nobody's buying the White Dwarf.
I was going to say, nobody buys the White Dwarf.
Shut up, John.
You know, like
I don't love you anymore. I want you to be mad at me again.
See, again, fucking revenge sex and angry sex. I don't know why you'd made peace.
I hold that mine is stupider.
You know, I don't know. Because
I agree.
Yeah, I mean... I think it is because, yeah, it's a core rule. I mean, if I didn't buy the psychic power cards, what's to stop my Tyranids from saying I want pyromancy?
Exactly, right?
Like well, you're just like, I'm just going to take this.
Take pyromancy.
Well, even the Sky Ray. Like, we can all assume that in the next Codex that the Sky Ray will actually have Skyfire and that'll be all there. Why it's not in the FAQ is fucking retarded, but whatever.
Or maybe even FAQ Redux. Because remember, when 8th Ed dropped... Yes. You know, they released all of the FAQs, and then a month later, they had updated more than half of them because, oops, we missed shit.
And that's exactly it, right? Like, we know that that's going to happen. I feel it's going to come around eventually. Nobody's saying that, you know, I think if the next Codex came out and it still didn't have Skyfire, yes, it would be a real bad stupidity check, and it would dominate mine, but I still think mine is the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree because it's a core rule missing from the core rules.
Yes, exactly. And that's definitely one of those things. I mean, we know that as the rule books come out, that they will include this psyker can use these particular lores or whatever they're called. But really, it's like, how long are we going to have to wait until every single codex has been redone for 6th edition, right? That's
I was
a long
say,
fucking time.
4th edition didn't redo all the 3rd ed codexes.
Yes,
and
exactly.
5th edition didn't redo all the 4th ed codexes. So I would say let's not hold our breath.
Yeah, the smart money is not on not holding our breath. Mm-hmm. All right, so highlights. Let's talk a little bit about highlights from the games that we've played over the last few weeks here. We've kind of talked about it a little bit as we were going over the phases of the game and really how we've seen these big changes. And that obviously got off topic, but, you know, hey, welcome to Jaded GamerCast. So,
well, at least it wasn't about penises this time. We were actually talking Warhammer when we were off.
Yeah, more. less. There was one penis reference with regards to Sanguinius.
I was going
to
say, I think there's a few with Sanguinius, but that is always the case whenever Blood
you
Angels...
You can't talk about Blood Angels without talking about that kind of stuff. But really, I mean, you know, I mean, the big standouts for me are I'm much happier with my all-infantry Necron army. I'm looking at my other armies, again, I think everything that I was kind of hoping for 6th edition has kind of come through since I've been playing a ton of 40K, kind of getting back into it, falling back in love with it, which is really nice. What about you guys?
I'd have to agree. You know, like just playing these games, being able to move more and shoot, it just seems like you're doing more in a turn. It's not like, oh, okay, my guys are going to sit on this table and I'm going to roll dice at you. No, now it's, you know, it's a little bit... More
to be fair, you haven't played your guard army yet because they were the biggest culprits for the why would I move?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they still kind of are the biggest culprits for why would I move, but I think that the scenarios are built in such a way now that if you are just going to be sitting on the back table edge, one out of three scenarios, you know, on an average, a third of the scenarios may accommodate that depending on deployment. It may accommodate that. So I think, again, if you're playing the sit at the back of the table edge and, you know, pray for this type of army to come against, you know, you're going to be screwed by the scenarios 9 times out of 10. I know those are two disparate fractions that I've just quoted here, but
Jada Gamer
fuck all y'all.
Math.
Well, yeah, that's Jada Gamer math. You can't go wrong with that kind of stuff. But really, I mean, if you're going to sit all on the back of the table and you roll up the scenario with three objective markers and your opponent got to place first, so he put two in his deployment zone... And well, you only got one.
Here is one of the most beautiful things about the edition, though, Lang, is you actually place your, don't you place your objectives before you figure out your deployments?
Yes, very much so, right?
You know, so it's just like, I could deploy them expecting long table edges and get short.
Right. Well, and
in which case, now I have to move.
Yeah, and again, you could deploy them. Well, wait, hold on. I think you might be wrong on that. I thought it was the person, when you roll to see who picks, like you deploy scenery before the game starts. But my understanding was whoever won the roll to pick their table edge gets to place, or is it the opposite?
No. Here's the thing. You determine your armies, blah, blah, blah. Then you determine the mission that you're playing before you know your battlefield. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when it talks about it, after that sort of 1, 2, 3 and showing you what the different ones are, you set up fortifications, then you set up terrain, then you place objective markers, then you determine warlord traits and deploy. So, I mean, potentially, I don't know, that's interesting.
Yeah, and again, you never know the way it's deployed, right? I mean, people can place things where they do place two. You know, for me, especially if I was playing a real close combat heavy army, what I would do if I had the option to place two of the three objective markers is I would definitely put two on one side of the table, because either A, I start with two objective markers, or B, I'm a combat army. I want to charge to the other side of the table. I know that by the end of the game, if I'm winning, I'm going to be on top of those objective markers, and then I'm going to have all three. You know, so I think that, even still, I think that kind of gameplay is going to work more for armies that have mobility on their side, as opposed to armies that are just sitting on one side of the table. Because if I know that I'm playing a guard army that's just going to sit on one side of the table, well, I'm going to put all the objective markers in the middle of the board.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like that kind of stuff is really going to be important.
And then you have to remember, Capture the Relic has the objective marker in the middle of the board anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just read the place objective markers thing, that you place it after you choose your deployment zone, so you know where you're deploying.
Right, okay, that's what I thought. That was what I thought when I was playing against Jason. You know,
so that's kind of silly, because then well, now as in I know what kind of deployment it is, or I know where which side I'm on and then place them, because otherwise
verbatim, that's fucked. Unless instructed otherwise in the mission, starting with the player who chooses their half of the table first, take it in turns to set up objectives according to the following rules, like not within 6 inches of any battlefield edge, 12 inches of another objective. They're closer on the battlefield edges, because it used to always be 12.
12, yeah. Now it's 6 inches, so you can put them right in.
No objectives can be placed in or on impassable buildings or fortifications. So right. Think about that if you buy that stupid Fortress of Redemption, you dumbasses.
Angry Asian. It's angry the Asian. Yeah, okay, and that's what I thought it was when I was originally going down, talking about it, was because those deployments for your objectives is really, really important, because you choose your deployment side, you know where you're going to go, and then, hey, you're the one who's placing that objective first, and if you're only going to be placing an odd number of objectives, you have to play very aggressive to get those objectives from your opponent.
Yeah, I was going to say, that actually changes a lot of things, because, again, yeah, shooting armies that know that they've won the role to deploy first, they've picked their half, and now it's a three-objective game, can park two in their deployment zone. Yeah. So that's interesting, because it actually gives the player who's going first, who already has advantage after advantage, a further advantage. So that's interesting.
Well, especially if you're shooting army, like, being that reserves have been nerfed hard as well. The fact that you can only put 50% of your army in the reserve, and the fact that you can only, if you come off on the sides, you can't assault anymore.
It's rough. not assaulting off of outflank has ruined Gene Stealers to me.
Yeah,
I'm just like, they're just not worth it. That was why you took them.
Infiltrating is still pretty good.
Infiltrating is okay. It's as okay as it always has been. And in 5th edition, infiltrating was never great, because it was always the obvious shoot the fuck out of them.
Well,
unit. Yeah. And now I'm just like, I can't do anything.
Infiltrate is always dependent on the size of the board, the amount of the terrain, and the size of your opponent's army. That's all it's ever dependent on.
Well, and also specifically how they deploy.
Well, like, and honestly, exactly, right?
I wouldn't go multiple MSU with it, though, like, and go 5 with a Broodlord with one of the new psychic powers.
Hey, you can't go back and say, hey, MSU is great now.
Hey, you just said, why wouldn't you think about it?
You have spent 40 minutes arguing.
Oh my god.
Jesus fucking Christ, John. So I guess this means I'm right.
Nathan.
All right. I will take it. I am right. Yes, yeah, that is Jada Gamercast. I'll just end it with I'm right. Fuck all of you.
Another amazing thing about this edition is that it has made Nathan love his Tyranids again.
It's true.
Kind of.
I do love. No, I straight up bought Tyranids today.
Oh, well, good for you. All right. Well, okay. So next episode, we're probably going to delve a little bit more into special rules, vehicles, things of that nature. Again, if there's anything you'd like to talk about on the show or if there are any questions that you'd like to have answered, please email us at jadedgamercast@gmail.com and we'll try to get to it. Other than that, that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
I'm John.
Have a good one.
Cheers.